I want you to turn this evening not to Genesis 42, but to Genesis chapter 41. Genesis chapter 41. And I want to read from verse 37 of Genesis chapter 41. Genesis chapter 41, verse 37. This is after the dreams have taken place, that is Pharaoh's dreams, and the interpretation of those dreams that Joseph has given, and the fact that Joseph has made it clear as to what he thinks should be done in regarding to those fears. I think we'll pick up actually in the verse 32 of chapter 41. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dreams means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Now therefore let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years. And let them all gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land, so that the land may not perish through famine. This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and as wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall offer themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot. And they called out before him, "Bow the knee." Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneneh, and he gave him in marriage to Asenath, the daughter of Potipherah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly, and he gathered up all the food of these 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. Before the year of the famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipherah, son of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, "God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house." The name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come. As Joseph had said, there was famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. What he says to you, do." So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt, to Joseph, to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. There we end our reading of God's Word. Last Lord's Day evening, we considered together the blessing of God in Joseph's life. How that God blessed Joseph regardless of the circumstance that he found himself in. We saw that God blessed Joseph because of Joseph's clear acceptance of the commands of and obedience to the commands of God. We saw that how God's blessing of Joseph spoke to the unbelievers around him, Potiphar, the jailer, and then Pharaoh himself. And then we considered how that God's blessing in the life of Joseph was all about God being with God. God being with Joseph, rather. This morning, we considered together how that Joseph was a man who demonstrated compliance to the will of God, and how that his character demonstrated that compliance. And I want to just very briefly this evening summarize that again, but flip them around and look first at a reminder of his character and then at the compliance in his life. We considered how the character of Joseph, a character that was forged, as it were, through difficulties and testing in his life, demonstrated that he was a young man and a man who grew in maturity in the things of God. We first meet him at the age of 17 when he is sold into slavery. And now these events that we read of in Genesis chapter 41, we read that he is 30 years old, verse 46 of Genesis 41. He is 30 years old, verse 46, when he enters the service of Pharaoh. And we saw how that this character of Joseph, this maturing and this development of his character, was directly attributable to his making good decisions in each stage of his life. In his family, in Potiphar's house, in the prison, and in his service with Pharaoh. And we considered how he was able to make those good and right decisions that it grew out of his walk or his consistent relationship with God. Joseph did the simple thing well. I think it's one of those most striking things about this account of the life of Joseph, that Joseph never did anything really startling. You don't read the life of Joseph and you say, wow, that's astonishing what he did. That's remarkable what he did. He didn't write any great theological treatises. He didn't plant many churches. He didn't have an astonishing array of achievements listed behind his name. What do we find about Joseph when we read about Joseph? We find that he accepted the fact that he was sold into slavery. We find that in the house of Pharaoh, he did his job. He did his work. That's it. We don't read about Joseph excelling in terms of what he did. Excelling in the sense of being someone who his achievements were heroic. His achievements did excel, but they excelled because the Lord's hand was upon him. But the Lord's hand was upon him because Joseph made good decisions. And in Potiphar's house, the most astonishing thing he did was simply say no to a woman who lusted after him. That was what he did. He said no to a woman who lusted after him. In the prison, he did his job. In the prison, all he did was pay attention to his fellow prisoners. And he listened and he observed them, and one day he saw that they were not at themselves, as we would say. There's something not just right about them. Well, that's not an astonishing thing to do. He just observed the people around him and cared enough for them to ask questions of them when they didn't look at themselves. And when then they spoke to him about the dreams, he simply said that God would answer them their dreams. That wasn't an astonishing thing to say. You waken up one morning, he sees that the cupbearer and the beggar, that they are not in good form, that they were troubled. He asks them what the problem is. Why are your faces downcast? That's something any one of us could ask. They tell him that they have had dreams and that can no one interpret them. And he simply says, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." Nothing remarkable about that. When he languishes in the prison 2 years after the cupbearer is released, we don't read anything remarkable about what Joseph does. He just gets up every day and he does his job. When we read about his interaction with Pharaoh, the most exciting thing that we almost read about is the fact that he has a shave and changes his clothes. There's not a great deal of furore about what he does. It simply says that when he's sent for, he shaved himself and changed his clothes and he came in before Pharaoh. He had a wash, shaved himself and put on some clean clothes. Then when Pharaoh asks him the question, all he says, "It is not in me, God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." So when you look at the life of Joseph, what exceptionalness do you read about? Viewed about the fact that this young man got up each day, did his work, made simple decisions that reflected that he had a relationship with God that governed everything that he did, and he went about his affairs in light of that fact. That's the exceptional thing. And yet, isn't it true how difficult it is to do that exceptional thing of getting up, doing what God has given us to do, in whatever way God has given us to do it, whatever that capacity is, doing what God has given us to do, fulfilling what we have said we are going to do, without making any excuses, just doing the simple thing well, and going about our lives, keeping our word, and applying ourselves to that task simply. That's the way God works. God works through individuals who love him, have a consistent walk with him, and do the simple things in life well. If you want to receive blessing from God, have a look at your life over the last 6 months and ask yourself, have I done every day that simple task of putting God first in my life above everything else? Have I sought first the kingdom of God? And be honest with yourself. Don't sit there and think to yourself, well, I have. Be honest with yourself. Actually think about it. Don't just assume that you have. Ask yourself, have you diligently and faithfully undertaken what you said before God you would do? The promises you have made before God, have you done those things? If you have made promises before God? And if at the end of it you say, yes, I have, then you know you're a liar. You know you're a liar, because none of us have. But if you have a sense, well, I have done that to a large degree, then you can be sure you're walking in the pathway of God. And that he will bless you in every way he chooses to bless you. That character condition arises out of a constant walk with God, born out of love for God. Having a heart to do the will of God. That's where that comes from. It doesn't come from anywhere else. It doesn't come. You can't manufacture it. You can't determine that. You can't force yourself to have that. It comes from a heart relationship with God. Compliance. We saw that trust is established when you are compliant to the will of God. When you're compliant to the will of God. Joseph was compliant to the will of God. Compliant to the will of God in relation to honoring his father. Compliant to the will of God in relation to his denial of relationships with Potiphar's wife. Compliant in relation to the daily diligence he applied himself to the tasks that he had to do, both in Potiphar's house and in the prison. Compliant to God in his honoring God and his speaking to the two prisoners regarding their dreams. Compliant to the will of God and expressing and honoring God's purpose and sovereignty in his answer to Pharaoh. He did the will of God. Why did he do the will of God? Because he trusted God. Now let's think about that. He trusted God. How much of the Old Testament did Joseph have to read and consider and ponder on? How much of the New Testament did Joseph have to school his mind and his understanding of why he should trust God? Well, I think the fact that this appears in the first book of the Bible, near the end of the first book of the Bible, gives you a hint that he didn't have a lot of what was in the Bible. He did have a knowledge given to him by God of what was right and wrong. But think about it. Think about his experiences. What does his experiences teach him? Does his experience teach him to trust God? He trusts God in terms of his communication with his father regarding his siblings when he brings back that report to them. Where does that get him? It gets him stripped of the coat that manifested God, the Father's love for him. It gets him thrown into a pit. It gets him sold to foreigners traveling to the land of Egypt. Where does it get him? It gets him bought as a slave, put into the house of Potiphar. Where does that get him? That ends him up in prison because of this illicit activity of the and the telling of lies of Potiphar's wife. Where does that get him? It gets him languishing in prison. Where does his trust of God get him whenever the cupbearer and the baker have their dreams interpreted? That gets him another 2 years in prison. Where does that get him? As he looks at his life as a young man and the evidences of his life, how much would you say that the trusting of God he could look at and say, yes, you trust God and God blesses you at every turn? This young man could have looked at God and said, the more I trust you, the worse it gets. I get sold from my family. I get separated from my father and my brothers, and I'm sold into slavery. And I begin to make a go of it in the home of Potiphar. I begin to be a success. I'm thankful, God, that you helped me in that. But then you don't stop this woman. Keep taunting me. And when I deny her, you keep allowing her to taunt me until the point where she then cries wolf and I'm sent to prison. And then when I'm sent to prison, I'm then in prison and I do my best again, only to find myself languishing in prison after I have honored you. You'd think this young man would have cased to say, God, where on earth does the trusting of you get me? It just gets me worse and worse and worse. From the pit at the Potiphar's house into the prison. And then here I am going before Pharaoh. Easily could get my head disconnected from my body. A Hebrew slave. Being lauded as a great interpreter of dreams. What if I can't interpret this dream? Where am I going to end up? If he put his favorite cupbearer and baker in prison because they annoyed him some time ago, what's he going to do to me, a Hebrew slave? He's already going to be angry because his magicians can't interpret this dream. He's already going to be angry because those who have previously told him that they could do it can't do it. And I'm going into that context, into that situation. Had he not every reason for not trusting God in a human perspective? And yet, he is compliant with the will of God. You know what? He lays shame on all of us. He lays shame on all of us. Given what we know about the Word of God, given what we know about God, and how God has kept His promises through His Word, the way in which we do not trust God in comparison with this young man is sometimes quite remarkable. Quite remarkable. We have it in black and white before us. We can read it, we can turn to it, we've heard it preached on, we've studied it, we've read about it, and yet there seems to be something within us. Is it because there's a lack of compliance with the will of God? And that lack of compliance with the will of God has an impact on our capacity to trust. The more you comply, the more you trust, and the more your trust is proved worthwhile in an individual, then the more you will trust. You think of the relationships in your life that are the strongest. Are they not the strongest because you have trusted someone and they have proved, even with all our human frailties, that they have proved genuine in keeping your trust? And then you go and you place your trust in them again. Why? Because they have demonstrated that they are trustworthy. And so our relationships build because we see that they are trustworthy. Well, we are compliant with the will of God. We are compliant with the will of God and show that we trust Him. Then what will He do? Well, He'll test us more and He'll allow Satan to tempt us more. That's what happened. Joseph, when he was in the prison, Psalm 105:19, he was tested. He was tested by God. Why? To lead him into a more compliant and even more increasingly trustworthy state. Why? Because God wants to use him. The more you comply with the will of God, the more you demonstrate to God that you trust Him, because that's what compliance is. We do, as I said this morning, we do because we trust. If you trust God, you will do what God says. The reason why we do not do what God says is because we don't trust Him. There is no other explanation for it. There is no genuine other explanation for it. The things that we do not do in our lives are because we do not trust Him. And it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. When we put our hope or our aspirations in anything or anyone else but God, for any aspect of our lives, we are essentially saying we're doing that because we don't trust You, God. We don't trust You to provide for me. Why do we go off at tangents in our lives at times? Why do we seek out other areas of satisfaction in our lives? Why do we seek joy in other spheres of our lives? Why is there a want within us at times that I need this in order to satisfy that want? I have to go there to get this need. I have to have this in order to be happy. Why is that the case? Well, often, it has nothing to do with the Lord's leading. It has everything to do with our inability to trust God. We don't trust Him, so we have this want generated in our lives, and that want leads us to do something that then leads us away from God, because we find that our trust in that thing, whatever that thing is, the trust in that thing will lead us away from God. It inevitably will, because we're following after the desire of our heart. And if our heart is leading us away from trusting God and complying to His will, then we're on a journey that will increasingly take us away from God. And then that will demonstrate itself in the way in which we live our lives. He trusted God with all his heart. He was compliant with the will of God, and he made good decisions arising out of the character that he possessed. The competence in his life was clear. And this competence in Joseph's life is formed through discipline. Joseph, and this is not to undo anything I said about Joseph being a young man who did the simple thing well. He did the simple thing well, but he was a competent individual. You see that at home with the sheep. You see that in Potiphar's house. He does things in a competent way, an able way. In the prison, he is given responsibility because he is competent. In Pharaoh's service, he excels because he is competent. And even through the difficulties of his life, as a slave in Potiphar's house, he is competent. Through the fetters and chains in the prison, he is competent. Even with the huge responsibility in Pharaoh's service, he is competent in difficult circumstances. You read the life of Joseph, his character enables him to make right decisions because of walk with God. His compliance to the revealed will of God in his life means that he excels in the sense of his obedience to God that facilitates a growing depth of trust in God, and that manifests itself in success wherever he goes. Recognized by his father as a competent leader, recognized by the Potiphar as someone who is competent and who brings success with him, so much so that Pharaoh left him all the responsibility of managing his home. That's an astonishing thing. It's an astonishing thing when you think about it. Here was this young man, late teens, early 20s, and he has been given responsibility to run the household of the captain of the guard of the king of Egypt, who rules that nation, the greatest nation in the world. And that man, Potiphar, doesn't have any concerns except for what he eats. Think about that. Young man, early 20s. And he not only runs his own life, he can manage this whole household. Why? Because of his character. Why? Because of his compliance to the will of God. Why? Because of his competence. And by the age of 30, having served, as it were, another apprenticeship in the prison, he is elevated to the position of second responsible for Egypt. There's nothing in Egypt that is not under his command except for the throne of Egypt itself. 30 years of age, and he is running the largest nation in the world. 30 years of age, and he's not only running the largest nation in the world, he has responsibility for gathering in the foodstuffs that are going to feed that nation through 7 years of barren famine and ultimately the entire world. 30 years of age. He begins the task of gathering in one-fifth of the produce of all the land. He has to manage that. He has to get up in the morning and be awake and alert for his job. He doesn't sleep in. He doesn't need someone ringing his chap on him and telling him to get out of bed again. He's up and at it. He's thinking about the tasks of the day. He's thinking about the situation that lies ahead of him. He has this huge responsibility of gathering in this food. Think about the scale of that. All the harvests that are coming in throughout the whole of Egypt. I should have looked up the size of Egypt as a landmass. But all that great nation, and all the harvests that are being brought in, and it's not just an ordinary harvest, it's a harvest that is overflowing. It's a huge harvest. It's an amazing harvest. It's a growing harvest. It's an abundant harvest. And he has to manage that. And not only in the bringing in of that harvest, he has to then make sure that that harvest is stored adequately for that duration of those 7 years when there's going to be a famine. And then he has to negotiate with everyone the terms of that, although he has the command of doing that. And then when the people run out of food, he has to negotiate the selling of that food or the giving of that food to the people in Egypt and then to the other nations of the world. He has to instruct men what they have to do. Those men have to instruct other men. Those men 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 instruct other men. There are tens of thousands of men who are working under Joseph in this task of providing for the nation of Egypt and for all who had come to Egypt during the 7 years of famine. Tens of thousands of people were working under Joseph, and millions of people where he was responsible for the care of millions of people through the provision of food for them. He was an exceptional individual in terms of his competency. But there's something about competency. It's not just about aptitude or giftedness. It's about application. You can be a highly gifted person. You can have a high aptitude, a high level of ability. But if you don't apply yourself to the task, if you don't give yourself thoughtfully and deliberately and conscientiously, then you'll not achieve what you can achieve. You've heard about sports people, how that someone was a great and gifted footballer, but they didn't stick in at it. They didn't give themselves to it. They weren't prepared for the daily slog. There was something in their heads that couldn't get them to pursue after that opportunity. They gave up at the first hurdle, the first sign of difficulty. Oh, this is too easy. They didn't pursue it. And what applies to gifted footballers can easily apply to you and I. Oh, we just not bother. It's easier not to bother, isn't it? It's easier just to be lazy. It's easy just to put it off. It's easy just to lack application. What is a lack of application? Where does that lack of application actually come from? This young man had ability, of that there is no doubt. But it was the application to the job that enabled him to undertake that task. Where did he get the motivation to get out of his bed every day, kiss his wife goodbye, kiss his two sons goodbye, and go about his job? A job of immense proportion and huge responsibility. What motivated him to do that? Was it the signet ring that Pharaoh put in his hand? Was it the clothes that he had? Was it that he owned the second chariot of Pharaoh? Was it everybody that went saw him had to bow the knee of him? Was it the power that gave this young man a sense of motivation? It wasn't. There's no way in which this young man was influenced by power and desire. How do we know that? We know that because his character denied a pursuit of power. How do we know that his character denied a pursuit of power? We know that his character denied a desire for power because when he was in Potiphar's house, he could easily have stood on the basis of power and slept with Potiphar's wife in order to maintain his position. He knew that if he didn't sleep with her, there would be consequences. If it had been about keeping his position of power, he would have slept with her without a second thought. He would have gone into the prison and he'd have said to these men, "I can interpret your dreams." He'd have said to Pharaoh, "I can interpret your dreams." If it was about power, he wouldn't have mentioned God. Why mention God to a heathen who does not know God or has no desire for God? Why complicate it if you think the heathen is going to give you something and a position? Why confuse the issue with religion of God? He had no desire for personal power or personal esteem. It wasn't that he was bringing something to the table and everybody should be thankful that they had Joseph in their midst. There's Joseph. And Joseph puts out his chest and thinks, I'm the man, I'm the man. This couldn't run without me. Joseph had absolutely no thought of this couldn't run without me. For Joseph, it was about doing the right thing. For Joseph, it was about getting out of bed on the morning at the right time, having been to bed at the right time the previous night, getting up, doing what he had to do that day, spending time with God, thinking of the tasks that were before him, fulfilling those tasks, knowing God, delighting in God, believing in God, and fulfilling the plans of God for his life. That was the task that Joseph fulfilled. So it wasn't power that motivated it. What was it? What was the driving force? If it wasn't power, was it money? Well, there's nowhere we get any sense that Joseph was desirous for great wealth and ceremony. What was it? What was it that motivated him? There had to be something. If it wasn't power, and it wasn't wealth, and it wasn't money, what was it? There was his trust in God. It was his trust in God. He wanted to bless God's name. How do we know that? Because he blessed God's name before his father. He blessed God's name in Potiphar's house when the wife came chasing after him. He blessed God's name in the prison with the two guards. And he blessed God's name before Pharaoh. Why did he do it? Because he loved God. Why did he love God? Because he trusted God. This man's life was established upon a trust of God. This man's life was grounded upon a knowledge of God. This man's life saw him not only use the aptitude that God had given him, the giftedness, it saw him apply himself to the tasks that were highly, highly demanding, hugely demanding, and increasingly demanding. Think about it. During the 7 years of plenty, there were probably men who looked at Joseph and the responsibility that Pharaoh had given to him and thought, well, that Hebrew slave has landed himself on his feet, hasn't he? He timed it well. He got into that job that Pharaoh gave him right at the very beginning, and suddenly everything goes well. Absolutely wonderful. Everything he does, everything is working out well for him. Think of the jealousy that must have existed in Pharaoh's court. The overwhelming jealousy that this Hebrew slave was being given the privilege to manage the ingathering of these 7 years of harvest. Now, they didn't know it was going to be 7 years. I'm sure there were people in Pharaoh's civil service and in the whole nation. They didn't know there was going to be 7 years of harvest. I wonder how many of them were saying after year two of the famine, he's getting a bit of his own comeuppance now, isn't he? He's finding it's not just as easy. Them 7 years he had went well for him, and now he's beginning to get difficult. I wonder as it went into the third and fourth year what they're beginning to say, and by the fifth and sixth year would they begin to say, I wouldn't like to be in his shoes. I would not like to be in his shoes. These people are coming now, and they're coming from all over the world. We are becoming... We're having to feed all these people from all... 37 years of age, and he's responsible for the feeding of people from all over the world. I wouldn't like to be in his shoes. This man applied himself to the task, whether in good days or in bad, because he trusted God. He trusted God. My desire for you is to see you trust in God, and I know that there are many of you who do. There's many of you in here tonight of a generation where these things were common practice, where the aspect of character and the sense of compliance and a pursuit of competence was part and parcel of daily life. And that arose out of a historical foundation of general godliness in our nation. General godliness. Where our nation was blessed through the preaching of God's word and the common grace of God, and men and women were brought up in school. The word of God was read at the beginning of the day. There was a sense of the fear of God in the nation. But we're not living in those days now. We're living in the days of sloppiness. We're living in the days of poor application. We're living in the days of you just have to talk to employers. 50 years ago, young men went out to work and they knew they had to go out and work and start a day's work in the morning, and they worked all day and they worked hard. You go out and talk to tradesmen now about apprentices. What will they tell you? You can hardly get them to do anything. Why? They're used to getting money easy, you see. They only spend half the day on the phone. Their avoidance techniques are all over the place. There's an inability in our society, in our culture, to actually get at the task of working. What is that related to? That's related to a lack of trust in God. And I'm talking at a very, very basic level across our society today. A lack of trust that means character has gone by the wayside. In generations past, men and women worked because the right thing to do was work. And they get paid for their work. They get paid for their work. But their work was the important thing, in a sense. Now people won't turn a hand unless they're getting paid for it. And I'm not saying that a tradesman or anybody else shouldn't get what is worth a day's labor. Of course, that is the case. But I'm talking about a sea change in the mentality of our nation, where no longer is there a character established, a drivenness about doing things properly and correctly and right. Now it's about doing the least for the most. What can I get away without doing, and how can I get the most money for doing it? And it's no wonder that our nation is in difficulties financially. And I'm talking right through the spectrum from whatever level right up to the top. Right up to the top. The greed of the bankers that brought our nation down was due to what? A desire to have immense wealth for doing very, very little. Well, that same greed is the same in a banker who's earning 1 million bonus a year as someone who is working in a situation where they're getting £50 a day. It's the same mentality often. But we, as the people of God, should have a different mentality. I'm not saying that we shouldn't work for nothing. That's not what I'm saying. It's not what I'm saying. It's not saying that we shouldn't be paid for what we're doing. But I'm talking about a character application. I'm talking about compliance to the will of God. And I'm talking about a competence that does both marries aptitude and application. Application. And that application is essential. That application is essential. That ability to do something that we say we're going to do. As I say, this morning I spoke to the young men under 60 in the congregation. And I said, we need to think about this. We need to think about this. We need to think about how we develop godly character, how there's a compliance to the will of God, and how there's an application to the task that God gives us in our lives. Because this nation is needing leadership in home, in the workplace, and in the church. And unless we who know God apply ourselves to these things and think about them practically, we are just going to get carried away with the rest. Just carried away with the rest. We're just going to be the same as the world around us. And it all arises from trust from God. It all arises. The obstacles in our lives arise from the trust of God or lack thereof. A lack of application in our lives arises from a trust in God or a lack thereof. An inability to discipline my life arises out of a trust from God. Why are you undisciplined in your life? Why are you not able to do the things you say you're going to do? The reason you're undisciplined in your life is because of a lack of trust in God. It's not that you were made that way. It's not that you were made that way. It's because of a lack of trust in God. If you trusted in God, you'd be motivated out of a love for God to do what you say you're going to do. That's where it rests. You have to think about these things. You have to think about your life. It's too easy to say of your life, of this difficulty and of that difficulty and of the other difficulty. We all have the difficulties. We all have demands. We all have stresses. Joseph could have said and talked to you for an hour or two about the stresses and his difficulties in life, and you'd been left sitting thinking to yourself, I'm glad I'm not walking in his shoes, given the life he's had. And we all can complain about, I have this difficulty and I have that difficulty and I have the other difficulty. Do you get one word of complaint coming out of this story of Joseph? Not one. What do you read when you see? You see a man that God elevates. Why does God elevate him? Because his character is grounded in making good decisions. Why does God elevate him? Because there's a compliance to the will of God arising out of the trust of God which leads him through difficult circumstances no matter what the outcome. Regardless of the outcome, he complies. And what of the competence issue? He applies himself using the gifts that God has given him to the best of his ability. God recognizes that and God elevates him. All because he trusts in God in his heart. He trusts God to get it right. He trusts God's will to lead him in the right way. And he trusts God that when he applies himself to do what he has been asked to do, that God will bless it. And he's motivated to do what God has commanded him to do and the opportunities that God gives him because he trusts in God. This is a beautiful, beautiful account of what happens in a man's life or in a woman's life when they lay hold of their lives and they think about God and they trust God. They trust God. The opportunities are unbelievable. And that's all I desire for you. All I desire for you is the absolute best. All I desire for you is that the opportunities in your life, material and spiritual, will be the best that you can have. That's all I desire for you. And all I've tried to do is to show you that it comes out of this trust in and of God.